KCH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. NTSB investigator Todd Inman telling ABC News they are just now beginning to piece together what happened in Wednesday's midair collision between American Airlines regional jet and a Black Hawk helicopter. As for what's included in the cockpit voice recorders,
the voice recorders actually have to be what's called auditioned among a number of people so that there's complete agreement of how the transcript will come out. And we also look for ancillary noises, maybe a boom or a thud or a crack or something in the cockpit.
An initial report due in 30 days. A final report will take much longer. President Trump saying without any evidence on Thursday that Democrats' diversity efforts contributed to the crash. A federal appeals court ruling a 1968 law barring anyone under 21 from buying a handgun violates the Second Amendment. The decision by the Fifth Circuit expected to be appealed to the Supreme Court. Three more hostages expected to be released by Hamas tomorrow, including Israeli-American citizen Keith Siegel. This is ABC News. New 25% tariffs expected to start tomorrow on imports from Canada and Mexico. President Trump saying he is not sure yet if oil imports will be included. A Texas mom now says she is considering a lawsuit after her 12-year-old daughter was blocked from going to the bathroom in between classes at her school and ended up having an accident.
I understand there has to be structure and there has to be policies, but for a 12-year-old to be made to use the restroom on themselves and to go to class and sit in their wet pants is unacceptable.
April Smith says she found out about it when her daughter called from Houston's Harmony School of Excellence asking for a change of clothes. The district says it's investigating and staffers have been put on leave. With just one game left in the NFL season, the league says concussions in pro football games were down 17% compared to last season. The league says some of the biggest benefits were in the revamped kickoffs. Concussions connected to those plays fell 43% compared to recent years. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. On Monday, January 20th, Donald Trump returned to office, sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. Right out of the gate, he took a number of actions on his top issue, immigration. Perhaps the most troubling of these is one aiming to end birthright citizenship in America. An immigration attorney I talked to told me, "We're going to sit through a lot of BS over the course of the next weeks, months, and years, but this is the big one." My take? This action from the Trump administration is despicable, unconstitutional, and fundamentally anti-American. The day after the order was issued, Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call joined a coalition of 20 states challenging this action in court. This legal battle will be a tremendously important one for all of us to follow.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
It's the Bucks and the Spurs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks will be just down the street from the Alamo tonight when they take on the San Antonio Spurs. Doc Rivers asked, after reviewing the tape, did he have any trouble with some of the refs' calls in their loss Tuesday night to the Trailblazers in Portland?
I thought the refereeing was, you want to be honest, they were going to let you play and be physical. So the problem was the other team was the aggressor. And to me, the aggressor should get the calls. I always say that. That's how it works.
Rivers also says, if the Bucks make a trade before the NBA deadline next week, it's fine, but he's okay with the roster as it stands. College hoops. The Badgers are at Northwestern tomorrow afternoon at 1. Marquette at home against UConn, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. NFL. A report the Packers plan to hire Patriots defensive coordinator DeMarcus Covington as their next defensive line coach. Linebackers coach Anthony Campanelli leaving the Packers. He's been hired as the new defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Well, the murder weapon was never recovered, and there were no eyewitnesses, but most people still think O.J. did it, including O.J. According to Simpson's doctor, Simpson took the truth to his grave. Why is there yet another docuseries about this horribly tragic true crime story? Because obviously people can't get enough of it. American Manhunt, O.J. Simpson, is a new 4-part docuseries featuring interviews with police, lawyers who were on the case, Simpson's agent, and Ron Goldman's sister, Kim. American Manhunt is available on Netflix. Speaking of Netflix, as we often do, when launching a new talk show, it's important to somehow make it unique and give it an identity separate from other talk shows. Comedian John Mulaney will host a talker on the streamer that has been the home to many of his stand-up comedy specials. Not many details have been released, and that is on purpose, according to Mulaney, who says this was the perfect match because he never wanted to do a talk show, and Netflix was getting out of the talk show game. I'm officially curious. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Not a bad winter day today. Partly sunny skies with highs in the lower 30s. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low near 13. On Saturday, look for some snow to develop, mainly after the lunch hour. High temperatures in the mid-20s, total of 1 to 3 inches possible by Saturday night. It's 13 degrees at our studios.
Dom Salvia.
Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Brian Hagedorn recuses from the Act 10 case. Also, Wisconsin GOP lawmakers seek to require public schools to display "In God We Trust." Will that stop school shootings?
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
All right, the coffee mug has been refilled. We're ready for the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday morning, January 31st, 2025. Luke Mathers is in for Greg Bach. Brittany Merlot is in for Brittany Merlot on this Friday morning. As we get things started, coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk a bit about Act 10, the lawsuit challenging it, and why two Supreme Court justices who may come at the case from different points of view may not be a part of the case by the time all is said and done. We'll talk a bit more about that. Also, a refresher on what it was that Donald Trump said when he first nominated Sean Duffy to be Secretary of Transportation. And if you thought it was a little awkward back in November when he said these things, it certainly makes more sense now after you hear the frankly, disgusting things that Donald Trump had to say yesterday after that airline crash. And we'll have our weekly panel with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze. We'll talk a little sports with Dan Schumacher as well before all is said and done on this Friday morning. But Brittany Merlot is here to tell us that, again, we get the ups and downs both of precipitation and temperatures over the next few days. Brittany, good morning. Did you enjoy warmth the right word? Yeah. Did you enjoy the warmth yesterday?
I would say warm is definitely the word. It felt like spring. Oh my gosh. I had the windows open and every room. I've never done that before in Wisconsin. Wow. In January. It was crazy. Felt good though. Okay. How about you? What'd you guys do?
I love the sunshine. I'm not allowed outside very often. I just am kind of a homebound creature. And every so often, Sherry pushes me outside and says, "Go outside and play. You can't be in here all day long." Aww. So I didn't get that chance yesterday. But I'm going to take your word for it that it was really nice.
I love that you act like it's somebody else's fault other than your own. You're like, "I'm not allowed to go outside."
Totally.
You're like,
my own.
"Yeah, I was just saying, it's your own doing."
Oh no, this is me, doing my violin lessons while all the other kids get to play out on the playground, and it's self-imposed, and I readily admit it. So, Brittany, if I were to go outside today and over the weekend, what would I expect?
Well, a little different, unfortunately. We're in the single digits far north. The coldest temperature across the state is 3 degrees right now into Eagle River, and then 41 degrees far south down into Kenosha and Racine. So a huge temperature spread, and that's kind of going to be with our highs today, too. We are looking at the low 30s, possibly below freezing far north, mid-30s throughout central parts of the state to low 40s down by the state line and in towards Illinois. Now, there is some rain moving through northern Illinois right now, so some light mist, scattered sprinkles are possible far south. Otherwise, today it'll be partly sunny and really kind of mild still. If you think about it, low 30s to low 40s, that's still well above average. Now, I know it's not like yesterday. That was 30 degrees above average. We were shattering records by 5 to 10 degrees. Not just tying them or coming close or by a degree or two, like blowing them out of the water. I mean, Bosca Bell hit 60 degrees yesterday.
What?
So a huge, yeah. in January. It's just in crazy. January. But wow. We've got the winter weather back right after this. By tomorrow, we have a low pressure system moving through. We're going to see some snow moving into the northern parts of the state, probably in the evening hours after 5, and becoming widespread between 9 and midnight. So that'll go through the overnight. You'll be waking up in the north woods to about 2 to 4 inches of snowfall. And then down south, really, honestly, just a trace to a half an inch. Not looking at much, but we warm right back up. So tomorrow we'll be into those mid-20s till mid-30s. And then Sunday, 40 to 50 degrees again. Sorry, it's hard to even just say this in January.
It is, 40 yes.
to 50 on Sunday.
That's again. Amazing. Do you know how I can tell maybe I've been in broadcasting a bit too long or maybe what? Just the right amount of time? And maybe, I don't know, maybe Luke will back me up on this. But at one point you said about the change in the weather. You said about the temperatures, you know, we'll be back right after this into the cold weather. And I just heard back right after this. And I just for a split second was like, what? Am I supposed to hit a button someplace? Go to a commercial break? You were just dropping in there, you know, be back to the cold temperatures right after this. But I heard right after this and I am just like, what? 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 Almost spit my coffee out over here. But yeah, this is the business.
We're keeping Pat on his toes this morning. Thank you, Brittany.
Yes, exactly. See, I don't need the coffee now. That was just like, what? I'm here. Brittany, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. It is exactly 7:11 right now. The Milwaukee Bucks are in San Antonio tonight for a game. Then they will play Sunday. They're in San Antonio tonight. They're home Sunday against Memphis. Yes, that's how he meant to say it. The 17th-ranked Badger men's basketball team is at Northwestern tomorrow afternoon, and you can hear that game on several Civic Media stations in Racine, Kenosha, Richland Center, Wisconsin Rapids, and Amory, and on the Civic Media app. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. Meanwhile, on our Wisconsin Rapids station, WFHR, you can hear Badger men's hockey, 6:30 tonight, 4:30 tomorrow, as the Badgers are in the Twin Cities to take on the Gophers. The 9th-ranked Marquette men's basketball team is home to host 25th-ranked Cincinnati tomorrow night. The top-ranked Badger women's hockey team is at Minnesota Duluth this evening and tomorrow afternoon. And that catches you up on some of the sports that you can hear on Civic Media and elsewhere as we head into the weekend here. I wanted to take just a second to talk about Act 10. That, of course, is the landmark law that Republicans passed for then-Governor Scott Walker in 2011, removing collective bargaining rights, by and large, for public sector workers. It has faced legal challenges before, but it faced those legal challenges to a Supreme Court that was made up of most assuredly conservative justices who had their own unique interpretation of applying the law. Now that the Supreme Court is progressive controlled, there has been another legal challenge to Act 10. The state Supreme Court, its progressive majority, has decided that it will take the case directly rather than having it go through the trial courts and the appeals courts. They will take it up for interpretation right away. But that does leave a bit of a quandary for two members of the Supreme Court. That would be conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn, and then there would be progressive Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Justice Protasiewicz has made comments about Act 10 and talking about, you know, how she agreed with a dissenting view of the case that Act 10 is unconstitutional. Justice Hagedorn, meanwhile, provided legal counsel for the drafting of Act 10. When he served as Scott Walker's chief legal counsel. Hagedorn has now said he will recuse himself from the lawsuit, saying yesterday, after reviewing the filings and the various ethical rules I am sworn to uphold, I have concluded the law requires me to recuse from this case. Janet Protasiewicz declined to participate in the recent order about Republican legislative leaders wanting to intervene in the case. And Protasiewicz has said in the past that she would consider recusing from a potential Act 10 challenge. So if she had recused herself and conservative Justice Hagedorn did not, you might have had a 3-3 deadlock on the court in terms of the legal challenge. But if both Hagedorn and Protasiewicz recuse themselves, then you still have the same balance in the court of 3 progressives to 2 conservatives. That's not necessarily to say how this particular case would go, but it is, I think some people will find it refreshing to know that justices on both sides of an issue would say that upon further review, maybe I shouldn't be part of that case. That was, if I recall correctly, part of the blemish on Dan Kelly's record was at one point saying he was going to recuse himself from a case and then putting himself back on it. This was about the time that they were working on lame duck laws before Tony Evers took office. And it was a real black mark on the Supreme Court's reputation at the time, political motivation in whether to recuse yourself from a case. So, again, I would tip my cap to Justices Hagedorn and Protasiewicz if they both decide that this is the way to go. And then I want to remind folks, again, not just of what President Trump had to say yesterday in the wake of the tragedy in Washington, D.C., and we'll talk more about that with our panel in just a moment. The reprehensible comments that, you know, blame DEI as somehow playing a role in the crash when there's no evidence of that whatsoever. I bring it up now ahead of time just to take you back and where I had that moment back in November where I felt like such an outlier. I'm like, is it me? Why am I the only one noticing something that Donald Trump said on the day that he nominated Sean Duffy to be transportation secretary? A lot of media outlets quoted Trump's statement that praised Duffy, saying he was a tremendous and well-liked public servant, a respected voice and communicator during his time in Congress. But then he went on to say this: he will prioritize excellence, competence, competitiveness, and beauty when rebuilding America's highways, tunnels, bridges, and airports. He will ensure our ports and dams serve our economy without compromising our national security, and he will make our skies safe again by eliminating DEI for pilots and air traffic controllers. And you might recall, I went a little wild at this remark and could not believe more people didn't right away have a headline that said, President-elect makes wildly racist charge that our skies are not safe because of black or female or disabled pilots or air traffic controllers. At that point, I was like, why isn't the media asking Donald Trump to provide just one example of how having diversity in the hiring ranks made the skies less safe? And I felt a little odd having basically at Up North News the only headline that I could see out there that said Trump implies America's skies are not safe because of women and minorities in air traffic control towers and cockpits. But it's what he said. And so I'm just reminding you of that now because it makes perfect sense if you remember that from November. A lot of people were shocked by his words from the podium yesterday where he savaged Pete Buttigieg and former President Biden and then went on a DEI rant. And the whole thing was just so unseemly. A president is not supposed to be, as has been called here, the spectator in chief, where he sees things and comments on them like he's watching a football game. When he isn't in the huddle, he doesn't actually know what happened on that play and why it was broken up, but he's going to speculate anyway. I can listen to sports talk radio all day and get that. I don't want that after a national tragedy involving airline crashes or things like that. But that's exactly what he did. And in doing so, went on what can only charitably be called a racist rant. There's no other reason. If you don't have evidence that race was a factor in this, then why would you even bring it up unless that was something right in your DNA? We'll continue this conversation and more about this week with James Santel, Mark Jacob, and Jennifer Schulze coming up next. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. I'm Pat Kreitlau.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Last April, federal cybersecurity agency CISA issued warnings to election officials on how to combat a Russian online scheme to mislead American voters in the 2024 election. CISA is now under attack by its own administration. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Act was signed by President Donald Trump in 2018, with part of its mission to protect election systems. It played a vital role in hardening state and local computer systems prior to the 2024 election, supporting state election officials, and monitoring hacking and disinformation campaigns perpetrated by Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. After the 2020 election, it refuted Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was manipulated. Trump fired its director, and CISA was targeted by Project 2025 for a dramatic overhaul, with some conservatives calling for the agency's elimination. Just before inauguration, President Biden issued an executive order requiring new CISA cybersecurity standards be implemented, but Trump immediately revoked it January 20th. CISA's highly qualified director, Jen Easterly, resigned on Inauguration Day. New Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, said in her confirmation hearing, CISA had strayed from its mission by monitoring disinformation. As governor of South Dakota, she refused federal funding to harden cyber systems, calling it wasteful spending. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Open that conversation with this person that you disagree with so much by trying to find the shared value, the thing that you both actually agree about. Challenge yourself to keep bringing it back to the value that we agree on and maybe even the outcome that we wish to see. Go have the tough conversation, because you know what gets better with practice? Those tough conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You know, the bumper music, it usually flows easily. It's somebody's birthday or an album was released on this day or something like that. No, this is National Hot Chocolate Day. And I had nothing else besides the 1970s group Hot Chocolate with this. So, Luke, don't shake your head at me like that. I mean, you didn't have anything better for Hot Chocolate. Look at how he runs away from the live stream right away. He's leaving me out on a limb all alone on this. Thank goodness I have a Week in Review panel to change gears with very quickly. Journalists Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. How are y'all?
Good.
Good to go.
Here we are, another week down. It's funny how the first half of this month just seemed to fly by, and then the second half of the month, for some reason, just seemed to drag. I can't quite put my finger on it. But let me start my questioning to former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about what President Trump tried to do back on Monday, Tuesday, early Wednesday. This whole notion of unilaterally being able to put a pause on a wide swath of federal spending. Things that weren't going directly to individuals like Social Security checks, but anything that was like a grant or a loan or it went through another group, which, as we all came to appreciate, is a lot that gets done. But let's start with the legal aspect of it first. He pulled back after 24 hours, Jim. Is it because you think he got bad advice that nobody happened to mention to him? The law that was passed in the wake of Richard Nixon that you can't do the thing that you're going to do, that you're talking about doing?
Right. The anti-impoundment statute. Oh, by the way, this thing called the Constitution of the United States of America, which also provides checks and balances. And this is why this is so problematic. This is why federal judges out there are saying the executive branch, the president, cannot do these things, both on birthright citizenship, now also on these kinds of unilateral decisions that change legislation. Goes back to the Constitution. Who initiates budgets? Who initiates financial things? It's in the House of Representatives, goes to the Senate, and the United States Congress puts together a budget. They appropriate, they allocate funds, different meanings for those two things. The president goes on, probably most often signs those budgets, and it becomes the law of the land. And that's the point, just like any other legislation would. I'd also invoke the language of the Constitution. Again, Article 2, Section 3, that talks about how our president is obliged. He took an oath of office to take care that the laws of our nation be faithfully executed. That's James Madison stuff. And when you unilaterally decide you're going to take up a pen and decide that the laws of the United States are no longer to be followed. And I've decided that, in fact, it should be something else. You're in violation of the Constitution. It's just that simple. Add one more footnote, which is some of these judges are also asking, Pat, precisely the question that you've asked, which is anybody in the West Wing, is anybody in the White House standing around the president saying, Mr. President, you can't do this. Let's take a look at the Constitution. Do we have any decent, thoughtful lawyers beyond the first year of law school who know about this? Apparently, the answer is not so much.
No.
we've all got the answer for you there, Mark. Tell us from your standpoint the coverage of it. Now, obviously, the first few hours of it were confusing because we're like, wait, he's doing what? Can he do that? How would you characterize what followed in terms of responsibly outlining either both the legality of the proposed move, but also the impact on people, that this wasn't just some 30,000 foot constitutional, you know, conversation. This was about real impact.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone started panicking with good reason. I mean, you know, some of these, you know, meals on wheels might have to stop. I mean, you know, getting old people fed food might be a problem. And the Medicaid portal was down, you know, and the new press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, held her first press briefing, and she could not even tell people whether Medicaid was affected. I mean, it was just stunning how reckless this whole thing was rolled out. And I know the media asked the questions, you know, they didn't get, you know, too many answers. But the really important takeaway for me is that there was blowback. There were people screaming. There were people upset. There was a lawsuit filed, and there was, you know, the judges acted. And when you have a reckless executive branch that is not going to respect anybody's rights or the balance of power in American democracy, then blowback is really important, and people need to scream loudly.
Am I being, Jennifer, a little too rose-colored glasses on this, or was this particular exercise actually a good bit of civic engagement where people suddenly understood, oh, when we talk about federal spending, it's not just it goes to the Pentagon or it goes to this. It goes to all of these things right in my community that impact me and my neighbors. Is that wishful thinking on my part that we kind of got a good kind of civics education out of the chaos?
No, I agree with you. And I also think that Trump in general has been a wake-up call for how much we do not know about how our government works and what our government does and things that we take for granted. I mean, from top to bottom, he's ripping apart systems that have been in place that I'm quite confident that most people in America have never really given a thought to. And so in that regard, yes, it's good news that that you might actually have to think about where's the pipeline, where's that money for Meals on Wheels coming from? Where's that money for cancer research coming from? How does that work if it forces at least some of us to start thinking about that and the implications of that? I think that is a good thing. Big picture, it's horrifying.
But it gets to a point that you were making last week, is that unlike Trump's first term, and again, here's the caveat, there's still a lot of progress to be made, but that some news outlets seem to be doing a better job of looking for accountability, looking for the signal, not just the noise.
I agree. And I think we've seen that again this week. Part of the problem is the fire hose of activity from Trump. And frankly, we don't have enough news media to cover it. And so things are coming out in blibs and blobs. Like, there's an independent journalist, I think her name is Maria Cabas. I'm not quite sure I'm getting her name right. She broke the story all on her own about the first OPM memo coming out about the freeze, not the Washington Post, not the New York Times. She did.
Mm-hmm. And that's, we'll talk a bit more about, you know, finding those good media sources when we continue with our panel coming up next. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit.
It's
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Well, today is the day that a lot of people in Door County and Wisconsin in general have been looking forward to. Green and Gold, the movie, opens. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Friday. The story, set largely in Door County, tells the story of Buck, a challenged dairy farmer in the 90s that decides literally to bet it all on a Super Bowl victory and the Green Bay Packers. Craig T. Nelson plays Buck, the struggling dairy farmer. Nelson actually has farming in his background and says that this work, he believes, tells the story of why agriculture is so important. And he had a message for all the farmers in Wisconsin.
You're probably the most important people that we can have in this country, and I mean that sincerely, because the value and the tradition and the beauty of what you do and the hard work, I mean, but there's a resiliency in the American spirit that you carry and that we seem to have forgotten and somehow marginalized you in a way that is just heartbreaking.
Craig T. Nelson, the star of Green and Gold, the movie, with a message to our farmers. You can find theater locations and purchase tickets online. Go to greenandgoldmovie.com. The movie, by the way, underwritten in part by Culver's.
Veltima fungicide outyields the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre. But you've never been average. The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Beat your own record. Get every bushel you deserve. And make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
If you milk with robots, you know that cow flow is everything. Cow Corner Consulting helps you maximize cow flow by working with your team to improve your barn workflows, your feed management, and your system settings. Visit cow-corner.co to learn how. Cow Corner is an independent consulting company and works with all brands of robots. They're ready to go to work for you. Sign up for the free e-newsletter or contact John Gerbitz at cow-corner.co.
And our current Alice in Dairyland, Haley Heinzel's been racking up the miles, but this time in the air. She just returned from a trade mission with the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin to Vietnam, Singapore, and Malaysia. Heinzel says the Ginseng Board wanted to target that geography in front of their Lunar New Year, which fell on January 29th. In Vietnam specifically, gift-giving is an important part of that holiday, and ginseng is a targeted gift. I'm Pam Yonke.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Not a bad winter day today. Partly sunny skies with highs in the lower 30s. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low near 13. On Saturday, look for some snow to develop, mainly after the lunch hour. High temperatures in the mid-20s. Total of 1 to 3 inches possible by Saturday night. Right now, it's 12 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
There are solutions to the rot in the Supreme Court, and it's a congressional binding code of ethics. There are solutions to the corruption. It's a constitutional amendment to declare that money isn't speech and corporations aren't people, and we can do this. These are things that Americans agree on no matter our party. We all know that presidents aren't kings.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Where are you at with dome stadiums?
Oh, love them. Snow games are awesome, but it's also a risk of injuries and everything.
Give me a dome anytime. I don't want to see elite athletes running on snow like it's me playing out there and tripping and slipping. I want to watch those guys run. I want the receivers to run and catch their passes. I want to see great athletes being great athletes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, John Dietrich joins us, Journal Sentinel investigative reporter, with his latest piece on gun violence in Wisconsin. It's important. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Timberlake has a birthday today, turns 44 years old. Mary, thank you for the comment on YouTube. I am sharing your broadcast with friends and family that need to hear your show. Thank you for being here in this time of great need. Happy Friday. Thank you for that, Mary. With perhaps a conflicting view is a text from Len in Madison that says, retired, listening at home on the old radio, wish it had remote control for volume on off and changing station. I'm hoping he just meant that about wanting to adjust the volume and not about changing the station. But Len, if you're there, we appreciate you listening anyway. Continuing on with our Friday panel here, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, journalist Mark Jacob and Jennifer Schulze. And Mark, I'm going to start with you because of the news that CBS and through it Paramount is looking to settle a lawsuit. Trump sued them over a 60 Minutes piece. And much like ABC settled a suit brought by Trump with that they probably really didn't have to settle. And the same goes for Meta, Facebook. Now CBS is doing it. Is this legalized bribery out of Trump? I sue you and then you give me money?
I view it more of as a protection racket. Nice network you got there. It'd be a shame if something bad happened to it. And so then he sues and then they settle and then they get what they want. In the case of CBS, you've got Paramount, which is the parent company that owns CBS, they're trying to do a merger with something called Skydance Media, and it requires federal approval. The Trump people have made it clear that they want to hold that up because they're mad at CBS. And so the Trump people sue CBS over how they edited a Kamala Harris interview on 60 Minutes. Ridiculous. I mean, everyone who deals with that kind of law says that this is a stupid suit, that there's no way that Trump would win. But Redstone, head of Paramount, she may be settling just to get her merger done. So yeah. you end up having this. It's a protection racket, and yeah. it is. If she does this, it will be, you know, completely just putting a shiv in the ribs of 60 Minutes of one of the most vaunted shows in journalism history. She will be killing its credibility and disabling it.
And it's got journalists outraged there and everywhere. Jennifer, just really quickly behind the scenes on this, just so we tell people the mechanics of it. What they did, what CBS did was they asked a question of Kamala Harris, and she gave kind of a longer answer. The promo shows the question and part of the answer, but the actual piece shows the question and a different part of the answer, but it's all the same answer to the same question. Trump claims it's deceptive. It's been standard practice as far as I know, but maybe you have reason to find fault with it?
No, not at all. That's totally normal broadcasting practice. You know, a promo is a certain length and you pick something that fits within that time frame. Your piece, the that airs within the 60 Minutes show is a different length, and you pick a soundbite that fits with that and goes with whatever the reporter is writing. The idea that he's alleging election interference because of editing of a couple of words is so ludicrous on its face. I can't believe it hasn't been thrown out of court, let alone that CBS is willing to pay him, or at least appears to be willing to pay him, a $25 million bribe. I don't even know what you do with that if you're a journalist at 60 Minutes or CBS. I think, I don't know how you keep working there. But no. Then I don't know what, okay, if you don't work there, what you do.
But we said that about the LA Times, too, right, after that publisher, right, you know, rolled over as well. Jim Santel, do you have a different point of view that there's something in any of these cases that would lead you to recommend settling such a suit?
There's absolutely nothing. And my colleagues here on our panel got it just right. There is a case, we all know it well, it's called New York Times versus Sullivan. It's an extraordinarily high standard for good reasons. Supreme Court has said that you basically have to just show intent and malice in doing something. Got to get the facts wrong. There's got to be some damage to reputation. All these kinds of things come in play. The editing of an interview comes nowhere near that. And I'm stunned not only that Paramount and CBS are doing this, but that the larger journalism community out there, as I guess we're talking this morning, is not rising up and saying, what a terrible precedent to set. if this is the kind of case legally that the lawyers either are recommending or maybe not recommending to be settled, what is next? What is next? And again, under established law, this should go nowhere. This, to Jennifer's good point, this should have gone off on what's called summary judgment or even a motion to dismiss on the pleadings, that there is no case here. What is going on here? And I think the frustration that you're hearing this morning is very, very well articulated.
Yeah, hey, and Pat, this is what will have would have a chilling effect on other newsrooms too. Lawyers at every news organization would be telling their journalists, no, you can't write that. We might get sued. And so it's not just CBS and Paramount that would be affected. It would affect everyone.
The funny thing is, well, not that the funny thing, but the thing that shows the times that we live in is that these established newsrooms that have been run credibly for decades and have certain standards and practices and attorneys and everything, they're the ones getting hit so hard right now for trying to hold Donald Trump accountable. Meanwhile, Jennifer, there are these smaller outlets that, again, you can play favorites with. We heard in the White House press conference, they're going to bring in some, you know, content creators and influencers, clearly the ones that they like. And Jennifer, you were writing about how there's a little media channel owned by Dr. Phil, which somehow is like getting the exclusive on these ICE immigration raids in Chicago. And it's like, again, what kind of media world are we living in now? I don't know.
Well, everybody's a journalist. If you have a camera, I suppose you can be a truth teller. And so there's been such a blurring of the lines that I think that's been just a huge problem. Not that I think that everybody doesn't have a voice and people, if they, want to get into this business, they should. But Dr. Phil is not a journalist. He does not do news. He does propaganda. Somewhere along the lines, he turned hard right, and he's been all in for Trump and MAGA for a while now. And he was here in Chicago, the only media given access to ICE. He was broadcasting from ICE command headquarters in a very scary voice, telling us how serious and scary these raids were going to be. And it was just so ludicrous, so embarrassing. And it was all a Trump manufactured program designed to share Trump propaganda. And I don't know how many people watched it. I don't know what influence it had, but it's part of a really distressing trend in the country where, Dr. Phil, I'm sure, has a decidedly different news audience than you, Pat, or mainstream media. And he's the voice there telling a story that, frankly, is not true. I can find no evidence that any of the people that he features in his piece have actually been arrested. Just to put that point on it.
That's the fragmentation again that I talk about, Mark, that, a Joe Rogan, previously known for hosting Fear Factor and MMA fights and things like that, has the most popular podcast. Well, therefore, he gets access to people. And that's, there's nothing wrong with access. But again, there's a difference between how journalists ask questions and some guy who suddenly got a popular talk show asks questions.
Right. And it's a backroom deal. I mean, it's a deal, if you're nice to me, you'll get time with me and it'll be good for both of us. And that's not journalism. There's something inherent in journalism that's kind of adversarial about public figures, where you're asking them hard questions they may not want to answer. You're bringing facts that they would maybe don't want the public to know. But none of that happens in this kind of, dealing, this kind of, you're my favorite person, so I'm going to give you the access. Nobody else gets it. And you'll lie for me. And that's what's going on here. And that, Pat, it just goes to show us that right-wing propaganda is brilliant. I mean, they do a really good job of lying to the public. I mean, they're very good at it. And people who want to fight that need to get better.
Folks who have heard Mark and I talk previously on Fridays know that the New York Times often comes in as a bit of a punching bag, but it's one of their own making. And you point out one that definitely got my attention yesterday. After Trump's ugly news conference blaming DEI baselessly for a crash. The original New York Times headline reads, "What caused the crash into the Potomac? For Trump, it was diversity."
Right.
They fixed that later, I assume.
Well, yes. And that's the headline on the homepage. The story itself actually said that he was, you know, that he had no evidence and that he was, you know, making up stuff to try to act like, you know, women and people of color couldn't, you know, work in the aviation industry. I mean, it's just so insulting, Pat. I mean, it's like, I mean, think about, you know, back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, we had a lot of air crashes back when hiring policies favored white men. So, you know, so if you want to do like the DEI thing, I mean, you figure that into the equation. We've had, this is the first fatal crash in U.S. commercial aviation in about 15 or 16 years. So these DEI policies, you know, I don't even like to call them that, diversity hiring or fair hiring is what I'd rather call them. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they were so disastrous, how come this is the first fatal commercial air crash in 15 or 16 years?
Right.
I also want to point out that 94% of the pilots in America are white men. So just so we, you know, that's a reality check.
Well, you're saying they're under attack if it's down to 94% now, right? Is certainly the way MAGA world would look at this. Jim, it raises this question about networks and, you know, these multi-million dollar settlements for suits. But I just mentioned, like, Joe Rogan and anybody else who can have a podcast. I've always kind of wondered about how more of these podcast hosts or companies, how they're not facing, you know, their own slander and libel lawsuits, because some people on podcasts say some pretty outrageous things. And I sometimes wonder, Jim, if you were like a legal advisor to some of these folks starting shows or podcasts or whatnot, you know, if you feel like they know enough about avoiding the landmines that could get you in legal hot water.
They plainly do not, when they are in these podcasts and in other forums saying things that are not only factually untrue, but they know that they're untrue, and they're advanced for exactly that purpose. As we're discussing this, all of us are thinking, of course, about another lawsuit. Remember the Dominion voting machines case?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Involving Fox News? There was a situation where, again, millions of dollars, huge settlement, huge judgment there. Why? Because Fox News said something in its forums, affirmatively, demonstrably untrue, with the intent, obviously, to harm. And there is they're very unusual under New York Times versus Sullivan. There is the situation where, in fact, there is a basis for recovery by a private entity or a corporation out there. Not here. And that's the point. You know, beyond that, we think about the other word I throw out there is deterrence, right? That in part, by CBS and others settling these cases, you're not deterring anybody. You're not deterring Donald Trump from continuing to make these completely unfounded allegations, to bring these lawsuits. And a big part of the public domain in and outside of court is to stop people from doing the bad things. That, regrettably, now also has to include the President of the United States of America.
Who'd have thought? I've got under a minute left, so Mark and Jennifer, just really quick answers out of you. I have to admit that I was completely wrong. I said in all seriousness that I fully, after Matt Gaetz, you know, stepped down from consideration, I said, there's no way Pete Hegseth gets confirmed as defense secretary. I was wrong. You needed four Republicans to show some spine. Three of them did. So my question to you quickly is, RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard, do they skate by and get confirmed as well, Mark?
I think RFK does not, and I think Gabbard does.
Jennifer?
I agree with Mark.
And that's where we are with this cabinet.
Yeah, isn't
you take,
it sad?
Take
isn't
out
it
the sad? Extremes, and the ones who should be the extremes in normal times, they just skate right through. But all right. Now, stay tuned, because next week we get this panel's bold predictions on Super Bowl. No, we don't, because I'll be gone next week. But anyway, Jennifer Schulze, Mark Jacob, Jim Santel, thank you all so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure.
When we come back, Dan Schumacher will help us talk about sports. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and you're up north.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
Last April, federal cybersecurity agency CISA issued warnings to election officials on how to combat a Russian online scheme to mislead American voters in the 2024 election. CISA is now under attack by its own administration. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Act was signed by President Donald Trump in 2018, with part of its mission to protect election systems. It played a vital role in hardening state and local computer systems prior to the 2024 election, supporting state election officials, and monitoring hacking and disinformation campaigns perpetrated by Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. After the 2020 election, it refuted Trump's false claims that the 2020 election was manipulated. Trump fired its director, and CISA was targeted by Project 2025 for a dramatic overhaul, with some conservatives calling for the agency's elimination. Just before inauguration, President Biden issued an executive order requiring new CISA cybersecurity standards be implemented, but Trump immediately revoked it January 20th. CISA's highly qualified director, Jen Easterly, resigned on Inauguration Day. New Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, said in her confirmation hearing, CISA had strayed from its mission by monitoring disinformation. As governor of South Dakota, she refused federal funding to harden cyber systems, calling it wasteful spending. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Carmelo Anthony for The Bail Project.
Bad news, you've been arrested. Good news, your innocent is proven guilty. If you can pay your bail, good news, you go home to wait your trial. If you can't, sorry, you go to jail to wait. But sure, you still presume innocent. But since you can't afford bail, you've lost your freedom. That's not right. And that's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting the end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
So Greg Bach is not here, but Dan Schumacher is. And so half of the pair that love to hear a little Grateful Dead as we wrap up the work week here right on Up North News Radio. So the only instruction I gave to Luke was play Grateful Dead. And so I don't know Luke's knowledge of the library, but Dan, did he pick a good one for you?
He did. He put a good one, a good groove on a Friday morning.
All right. Very nice. Mathers is so good. He wonders why we tease him, because he's so good all the damn time. So as I mentioned a sec ago, I'm going to be gone next Friday and then all of the following week. So I'm gone the next two Fridays. So Dan, even though we've got over a week to go, we'll talk a little Super Bowl because there's not much else for sports to talk about in Packerland over here. But what, I mean, is it understandable that a lot of folks are like, oh, it's these two teams again, and they're nothing to get excited about? Or do you see this as, you know, potentially a very exciting football game?
I think it's going to be an exciting football game, to be honest with you. I really do. I think you got a couple of dynamic players at quarterback position, running back position. I mean, everything just kind of checks the boxes for, I think it's going to be a better Super Bowl than it was last year. These teams know each other. I think it's going to be a good game. You know, of course, I'm biased because I'm such a football freak. But you know, I just think it's going to be a good game. I don't expect a blowout of any kind.
Do you think that Jason Kelce regrets retiring now? Because what was it, 2 years ago when he was playing against his brother the last time Philadelphia and Kansas City played?
But I was thinking the same thing, Pat.
He has since retired. Travis is still playing. Yeah. He's like, do you think he wishes he could suit up for one more game?
Yeah, I do, because at his position at center, they've had such trouble. It's the only position on the offensive line for the Eagles that's had trouble. And even in the last game, in the NFC Championship game, the center that replaced him got hurt. They had to move a guard over the center. So I got a feeling he was a little regretful that he's not got another chance to get a ring.
Luke, you looked like you were going to chime in on that too.
I don't know. He looks pretty happy with all of the different off the field adventures that he's been going on this year. So
I mean,
those have been cleaning the house.
What did they make just for the podcast? Just the podcast, wasn't it $100 million?
Something like that. Yeah.
That they're getting to do the podcast and the commercials, and his wife has had at times had the number one podcast.
I like her better than Taylor Swift.
Well, let's not compare them.
I actually think she's better looking too.
Both, but we don't have to go there. But both brothers clearly They done good, shall we say,
in having good overachieving
women around them. Yes, that's exactly it.
They'll kick this coverage for sure. They both have.
That's right. Patrick Mahomes, I mean, is he at his peak? Is he past his peak? Is it just overexposure because we see him on every other commercial?
To be honest with you, Pat, I don't know if there's a ceiling with him. I honestly don't think there's a ceiling with him. I've never seen somebody create so many plays and have accuracy with his arm, even in a drop back situation. So I don't see where he may, there's a chance if he keeps going, he could surpass Brady. I don't know. He's not like Brady would stand back there like a statue, 6'5" and yep. throw the ball. He moves around. Nobody gets a direct hit on him. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course the referees help him all the time.
Yeah, we do. We have seen a lot of that, unfortunately. Yep. So I did watch another football related thing yesterday, the Pro Bowl, or what has become of the Pro Bowl. And don't get me wrong, it looks fun and everything. But again, as an older person now, it's like these guys used to play a football game. A real football game. I mean, it wasn't,
real is kind of a loose term there,
but it was still a football game. It wasn't flag football, or in the case of yesterday, it was, a passing competition where they're trying to hit floating targets, in a big gym, and they're running around trying to catch a ball and dive into some mats. They're wearing like these big Hulk hands as part of it to catch a football in one case. And the whole thing is like, I don't know. Is it keeping up with the times? Is it entertaining, or and I'm just being old, or is it actually a statement on what we think of sports now?
I didn't watch it, so I can't even. I did see the quarterback piece where the talking head from ESPN, Orlovsky, who's a longtime veteran quarterback, he did the passing thing for the cameras. I mean, it seemed like if you're a quarterback, it was probably a difficult task to try to hit those moving targets from 40 yards away, but. You know, it's just a gimmick. I don't see it lasting two more years, Pat, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a viewership for it.
Okay. There's more of the flag football game, I think, is Sunday, and then the Super Bowl after that, but we'll be gone.
Pat, let me interrupt. The biggest push the NFL has, because I was just in a meeting with NFL representatives, they are funding across the country any college in the funding for the first 3 years to sponsor women's flag football.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely going to see the growth of that. And that is a good development in this. Yep. So, all right, Dan Schumacher from Northland College, thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
Hey, Pat, have a great weekend, everybody. See you, Luke. Right. Next meeting you, Luke.
Yeah, there you go. Look at this.
Meeting before, but good job on the music.
Thanks, man.
See, Luke, we love you. We do. Coming up Monday morning, we'll talk about the controversy of how test scores are rated in Wisconsin schools, and we're going to connect the dots because there's some legislative neglect that plays a role in why these test scores have been trending lower. Then on Tuesday, we're going to talk live with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley. She is running for re-election, and there will be a primary just over 2 weeks away. So we will talk to her on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, we will talk to one of the challengers, Jeff Wright, who is a school superintendent in Sauk Prairie, about his campaign to hope he wants to win the primary and then again on April 1st become the next state superintendent. We're still hoping to get Brittany Kinzer to commit to an interview as well, the third candidate for state superintendent of public instruction. On Thursday, we'll talk to State Senator Kristen Alfheim and new Assembly Representative Christian Phelps. They are both part of the LGBTQ caucus in the Wisconsin legislature. Thanks to you for being with us as well. Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday morning here up north.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media's own Luke Mathers, who will take a quiz about his beloved state of Wisconsin. And it's a bar band Friday night, so Terry Barr joins with new music. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Jackson Hewitt makes taxes feel like a yacht rock song.
April breeze, give me my biggest tax refund, please.
You, me, and a lifetime accurate.
accuracy guarantee.
And now get $100 just to try Jackson Hewitt. Does your tax person do that?
Say goodbye to that no guarantee tax guy.
Ready to sail through tax season? Go to Jackson Hewitt and you'll be
reeling in the reefers.
Limited time offer for new clients. Participating locations only. Terms at JacksonHewitt.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The black boxes have been located following the helicopter plane collision over the Potomac River that left 67 people dead. That is, President Trump continues to blame the Biden administration for the Washington, D.C. crash that happened in the first days of his presidency. Here's ABC's Mary Bruce.
President Trump is claiming without any evidence that Democrats' diversity programs are to blame for the tragedy. But Trump also acknowledged he doesn't know if the air traffic controllers made any mistakes. Former President Biden's Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg responding, despicable, saying as families grieve, Trump should be leading, not lying. We put safety first. Democratic lawmakers say Trump owes the public an apology.
President Trump planning to slap those 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada as soon as tomorrow. The move could raise prices on everything from pickup trucks to guacamole dip. Three more hostages expected to be released tomorrow by Hamas militants in Gaza. This is ABC News.